podcast from London. And his co-host, John. We are the...
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm... What an intro, right? That new Skeleton Boys intro is awesome because I'm Johnny.
And today we have a very special guest, Justin Wilmot. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you boys doing?
I'm doing good.
Pretty good, J-Dubs. He goes by J-Dubs.
Sometimes.
So welcome to the show. Do you want to just tell a little bit about yourself?
I work as a composer. John and I go way back, and we've worked on some audio stuff together. Worked on the new little ditty you just heard. And yeah, just keep composing. Just keep moving on and get away from art department.
Yeah.
We met doing art department. We did events together.
Yeah.
He's got a beautiful wife who's a good friend also, Micah.
She's the homie.
His brother Joshua, good friend too. Wilmot brothers, very handsome, well endowed, large penis gentleman, very talented, know a lot about art. All that stuff.
Some of those things are true and some of those are
Wait, no, you guys aren't brothers? Are you guys fucking best friends and I didn't know that?
Well, we'll leave it to the comments to figure that one out.
Cool, very cool. Since we're talking about horror movies, what was a movie that scared you? First movie that scared you?
Oh.
The Boy Behind the Door.
Oh, don't even say it, John. But that
quick fun fact, real quick. I this thing that I just worked on, the one of the best boys. She was the best boy and Boy Behind the Door.
Oh, really?
And I was like, oh my god, I forgot her name already. Yeah, I was like, it's you.
You're like, what's up? Isn't it nice to be out of the rain and off the mountain in the middle of the night?
Oh, she said all that first.
Yeah.
I think I gave her PTSD.
Yeah. For context, John and I worked on this indie feature in like the hills of Westchester?
Culver City.
Yeah. Like where the oil rigs are. And it's just like, I built a lot of things off battery operated tools under a pop-up tent while it was raining at 2 a.m.
Wow.
But we had a good crew.
Good buddies.
Yeah. Good art crew. Made it worth it. But
We should just name drop Brian Puckett. Wonderful friend, brilliant designer.
Absolutely.
Mitch Thompson, good buddy also. Great prop master, Kyle Smith, wonderful art director, brilliant everything really. And ironically, all of them well endowed as well. So.
Nice.
Yeah, like
it's just so weird. We were the nicest department, just with big swinging dicks.
Everything John is saying is true.
Yeah.
Rolando, to answer your question, what was the first movie that I got scared of?
Yeah, sure.
Oh man. I don't know. I mean, it's a pretty good. Isn't there a pretty good scare in Bambi? That's a good.
Oh, that's a like. Life affirming.
It's like an OG horror. Yeah. Like, whoa, mom's gone and somebody took her. What the hell?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh boy.
Mom's getting filleted.
Mom goes by a new name of venison. I don't understand. Man, that's a good question though. I don't know. Wait, what? What's the first movie that scared you two?
I like to say...
Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn.
Yeah, mine would be the It TV miniseries. That would be mine. Terrified me.
Oh, you guys got that like on top of your head. I'm like, I'm still Rolodexing, like trying to figure it out. Like, what was it? Damn, this is really great content for me. Well, think about it. I'm sure you boys are happy having me on right now.
Think about it for a second, because I like to talk about, you just brought up Bambi being kind of scary because it's like such a very sad milestone moment for a lot of people.
Yeah.
For me, it wasn't Bambi that did that, because I think I watched Land Before Time before Bambi.
Oh.
And that one fucked me up. Mm.
Hot Dogs Go to Heaven also fucked me up too.
Yeah. Oh, that was bad too.
Yeah.
You know what? Actually, talking about this, it did. You just reminded me the first movie I saw that actually like really just like scared me. I think it was like it's one of those animated films, and it was like mice, and there was like in the first 5 minutes there was this cat that one of like the mice overlords had as like their weapon. And the first 10 minutes are just set up like basically as a horror film. There's a moment where it just like it's a big jump scare, and I just remember like as a kid being like, "Oh man, what the hell is this?" Like, dear God! And like anytime I wanted to watch a movie, I was like, "Well, we got to get past this part first, and then it's gonna be good from here on out." I'm trying to remember what it's called. Like, oh man,
is that American Tail?
It could be. Sounds like American Tail. I haven't seen that movie forever.
Let me see, in my
mind palace. I think I saw what is it? Five Goes West in theaters. I think I was around that age.
Yeah, I did too. That movie, I still love that movie.
Oh, dude, it's so good. The Crazy Eye. Mm-hmm. Man, I saw Five Goes West before I saw American Tail.
I want to say I did too. I think I have the memory of the second one first.
Yeah, I'd say that. Oh, wait, is it The Secret of Nymph? Is that the name of the movie?
That could be
Did that happen?
I'm trying to think, like, it's like a pretty grungy, like, sewer rat kind of, oh, man. Damn. Really dusting off some records.
Wilbur? No, wait, it was Wilbur. Willard.
Oh, man, I'm literally typing in Disney Mouse movies at the moment just to try to figure this out. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Trying to think of more mice movies. I don't know.
The Rescuers? I don't think there's any scares in there, though.
Oh, boy. I don't know. Guys, I know you can't wait to have me back on. This is just like, I'm really bringing
it. So this is like a therapy session. Feel free to talk about whatever you like. It's not really a podcast. We go through feelings.
Did I just get tricked into therapy? What's going on? Like, you guys have to trick me. We could have just talked about this. Wait, who's the licensed
Micah
psychiatrist?
Asked us to talk. Yeah. Micah asked us to talk to you about something.
Okay. Oh, it might have.
She can hear you in your room, very listening to this YouTube clip of some mouse and a cat scare, very loudly.
Damn,
on repeat.
It might be. Maybe it's The Great Mouse Detective. God,
oh, that's another one. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's another.
Well, yeah,
I think we fit all the mice movies. Actually,
around that era,
we did it, guys.
We got them all.
Congratulations. Yeah, I think it might be. Yes, it was The Great Mouse Detective.
The Great Mouse Detective.
That's the one, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the very beginning just had like this moment. It was just like, damn, got me.
Very cool.
So, folks at home, that was just our long-winded way of telling you that we are connoisseurs of the mice Disney film.
Yeah, absolutely.
we popped off a lot of mouse animated movies pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun.
Which we did not mention, The Rescues Down Under.
I said The Rescuers.
Also good.
Yeah, I remember.
But they're two different.
That's
movies.
True. You're right. How dare I? Yeah.
I will
one's
be honest,
in England, one's on Australia.
to this day, whenever I take out a map or anything that folds similarly to a map, I still think about there's a scene in The Rescuers Down Under where like the city mouse is like trying to fold the map back up and the guy from the outback just like throws it away and he's like, how are you going to get around without this map? And it was like, yeah, dude, like it ain't there. But there is still a part of me that's like, nope, fold it back with the creases and make sure it lines back up. It's just so dumb. So dumb. Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Nice. So that was it for you. I was also going to say in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, the Large Marge part scared the shit out of me.
That was a good
and
one.
For the longest time, I thought I was the only one because the internet didn't exist to reaffirm.
Just trauma.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fair.
No, that's a good one. What about of late? What did you think recently of late that name, like the last like five movies you've watched that you enjoyed? What have you liked?
Some classics. There's Deep Throat. Debbie Does Dallas.
Well, I feel like to that question, there's like two types of people, like two types of people to answer that. There's like just like straight horror, and then there's the person that's like, "Well, I recently watched Don't Look Up, and let me tell you what a true horror film that really is."
Yeah,
the end of the world coming. Let's see. Last thing. Well, if I'm going to be honest, and this is why I think it's so great I'm on this podcast right now, I'm not the biggest horror movie guy.
Perfect.
That being
perfect
said,
booking horror... guy.
You're like, oh, I'm super glad we booked this guy. Fantastic. No, but the last thing that, oh man, I'll be honest. Jump scares always get me.
Mm.
I'm trying to remember the last one. Like it's like comically stupid because I can sit there and be like, oh, it's coming. One, two, three, it hits. And I always just like, ugh, like little flinch. But I'm trying to remember, guys, the memory is not what it used to be.
did you ever watch Insidious? James Wan's Insidious?
Yeah, that'd be an affirmative on the negative.
Okay. Because if you want like a jump scare movie where you can never guess where the fucking jump scares are going to be, that movie's fantastic.
That's good.
He's really good about that. I would also say Conjuring, his other movie too, is really very good.
I mean, James
she's just good at that, yeah, in general.
Fast and the Furious 5 or whichever, yeah.
I think he did the one with the dead Paul Walker, right? Whichever that was. Six. I think it's six.
Wait, zombie?
Too, zombie Paul Walker, yeah, is in there.
Fast and the Furious is really taking some turns here.
Yeah. Pun intended.
He added the middle name, so he's Paul the Walker.
Yeah.
I don't know. I will say, watching the film we're going to talk about today, I was surprised to just be like, would you consider this a horror film?
Yeah, I think so.
It's just creeping. Like art house.
Yeah, it's creeping from a lot of other horror movies, stuff like that. I was curious as to, this is kind of like a very kind of like eclectic pick, you know? So I was curious as to why you picked it.
I mean, I thought it was...
Had you seen it before?
I thought Nixon is super killer. No, I haven't. I've been meaning to for a while.
Same.
But to answer your... To really quick answer your question, I think I recently rewatched Alien.
Oh,
and
that's a
like,
great movie.
There were a couple like good jumps in there that got me. But the reason I ask is because like as I was watching, as I said, like not the biggest horror guy.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was watching, I was like, have I just grown as a person and this isn't scary? Or like, is it just like, that's not really the point? Like, it's more of like... Yeah, more cerebral, like art kind of stuff. And so,
it's not a jump scare horror movie. It's like a...
Yeah.
Like, there's this other movie what is it called? Come True. I've never talked about it
before. Oh, my God.
But it is also a cerebral horror movie. And it's
sci-fi horror, I would say this is almost sci-fi. It dips its toe into sci-fi as well.
That's a good question. First off, have we even...
No, we haven't talked about what we're doing or what we're talking about.
Because I am curious of if... And we can circle back on this, but if nobody told you it was a horror movie, how would you classify this movie?
Ah, that would be difficult.
But we can...
Yeah.
Yeah, we can circle back on that.
Well, if you knew nothing about it and you were somebody that never watched like scary movies or try to watch like... sci-fi art house films and you were stuck in a theater alone watching this, you'd probably be like, what the fuck am I watching? Probably get real tense.
No context is like wild, you know? Cause I think this is probably his, we're talking about the movie without talking about the movie.
But, yeah, sorry. Rolando, okay, we're going to steer the ship.
Barry Manilow's
man. Yeah. So, yes, this...
steer the ship, somebody.
This week, we are reviewing Mandy. As always, John will give us the plot in 5 words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we go to a deep spoiler analysis. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny...
5 words...
Plot summary...
Rolando, drum roll, please.
You ripped my shirt!
Oh, hold on. Let me
you ripped my shirt. That's 4, so that isn't...
No, that's not one. That's
okay.
Well, you forgot the exclamation mark.
That was going to be my my add-on and for to tie it up. You ripped my shirt! You ripped my shirt! All right, I got one here. I got 2 here, and I got 3. All right. For... Pano Cosmetology's Mandy. Coming in at number 3, I have Gore versus the Nick Cage.
Gore. Yeah.
That's good. That's real good.
Coming in at number 2 for Pants Cosme Panties, Mandy. Mad Red, the Road Warrior.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Mad
yeah.
Max?
Uh-huh.
It's Mad Max.
Oh, dear. A little bit of Max.
I mean, it's actually a shit ton of movies that he loves.
Yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of them. And coming in at number 1, where Barry Manilow's Mandy, the greatest Barry Manilow music video.
Excellent.
Nice.
This is Justin, you are our guest. Do you want to just give us your first thoughts on Mandy?
Yeah, sure. Right off the top, like in the intro, 10 spooky bones.
Then, oh, whoa.
Right off the top.
Whoa.
But then about 2 minutes in, you see Nicolas Cage using a chainsaw to cut down a tree. And immediately the score dropped because, God, man, that was bad. That was some bad chainsaw action. And on top of that, it literally just looked like they pre-cut it and like toss some sawdust on there. And you're just like watching the chainsaw wiggle in the thing. I was like, no more 10 spooky bones. Like, we started at 10 and we're going down. But
I started thinking about that too. I was like, obviously for safety and prop reasons.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
But two, I think it's just, again, if you're either on board with him also doing homage to like B movies.
Yeah.
Or you're very confused. Mm.
Yeah. No, but first impressions, I did really enjoy it. I thought visually and sonically, it was like a real amazing experience. And like, I didn't think about it till right now, but seeing that in theaters, I bet where you can get like that extension of the low end and that bass hitting you in the chest would have been just like out of this world.
Absolutely.
But yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I thought I kept trying to figure out if, I will be honest, one thing with it that tripped me up is like, I kept trying to figure out if I was missing something. Cause like at the, like act one, it seems like they have like a pretty clear critique on religion and extremism. And then like act 2 and 3, I kept waiting for like, especially with how artistic things were, I kept waiting to be like, oh, and then this is the other thing that they're critiquing in it. And I think I got to the end. I was like, either I completely missed some stuff or this just went straight ahead. And either way, that's fine. It's good and stuff. But I was like, yeah. I'm like, what does the tiger mean? I don't know if it means anything.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Other than like, this would be a really dope meatloaf cover. Like,
yeah.
But no, it's fun. I recommend everybody give it a watch.
Oh, cool.
How about you?
Nice.
What do you guys think?
So my thing is, I did watch this in theaters.
Oh, how was that, man?
And I was violently high. And I was at the Vista Vintage on Sunset, which is no longer in service, unfortunately. Until Quentin Tarantino does whatever he's going to do with it. Because he did buy it. The low end was so low, I missed a lot of the dialogue, and I was also just very engulfed in everything. Like, oh shit.
Yeah.
So when I finally was able to rewatch it, but this time I was really paying attention, I completely missed how funny this movie is trying to be also. It's like a very humorous movie half the time.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, whoa, this is like fucking mind-blowingly cerebral. Like, there's so many symbolic references that I miss. Like, no, I think what you're to kind of answer what you're trying to figure out, I think it's also his homage to like Korean revenge films.
Mm-hmm.
So like we had talked about previously, the trilogy, the Vengeance trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is also an homage to that.
Yeah.
So it's just like straight Nicolas Cage doing his thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, when I got to the end of it, I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it just got real straightforward.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And we can talk about it later too, but there are like certain aspects of like, some of the animation and stuff where I was like, am I just like really out of the loop on some of the lore or something that they're trying to tap into here? Like, like that, the rock that they use as like a orcarina or ocarina or however you say it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, am I supposed to know that that is tied to something?
That's true.
Mythic or something like that. Now I could have like prepared for this and like looked up what that was, but I didn't. So
yeah, I feel like a lot of it, something I think we've noticed in the other, Pantaloonies, Cosmomoonies is films is he's very tongue in cheek about all his like favorite things. So it could be like, oh, let's bring up this thing that seems important, but it's just because he likes a movie or like an obscure show. Like, mm-hmm. It's just his thing. Like, he's like, I fucking love it. Of course I'm going to bring it in.
Cool. Yeah. For me, my first thoughts was, it's funny, 'cause this was, Panos Cosmatos is like first, like, big movie that he was got aware of. Like, he got a huge hit out of this and led to everything. But I've seen everything else but this, because I didn't watch this when it originally came out. Mm. And watching it, I had a sense of it, of what it would be. And it pretty much plays out as a Panos Cosmatos. It's pretty much all the problems I have with this stuff is existed in this movie, and all the things that he does so exceptionally well and why he's like such a talented director is also present. So it's like he's definitely... out characterize him as an auteur, right? And as far as the story, I really feel like this is like two movies, because like the first movie is completely just a like trippy, you know, movie about like the relationship and then what happens with them, and then the whole second part is like a revenge movie completely through and through. So it almost feels like two movies just like mashed in together. And there's like all, and what he does so well as a director is that he like he's really good about making you feel things, even though these everything he does is feels like references to other stuff we've seen in other movies and pop culture, but he kind of wraps it up in his own like way, you know, which and really makes you he makes everything so visceral, like you feel everything in this movie, which was really nice. Yeah.
Did you notice though, like when it starts to like really go high octane is right after he does that like big mound of like he kills one of the guys or whatever. Sorry. Maybe it's spoiler, but, like, but then he like shoves his face into a mound of.
Did I watch the Mandy Moore documentary? We're talking about the same thing, right, guys? Yeah.
That's called The Walk to Remember by Nicholas.
Yeah.
Is right after he like. Shoves his face into like a mound of cocaine and then does like the LSD. That's when it goes like full on like Mad Max.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say in the third act, there were definitely times where I was just like, I would expect you to be moving a little quicker, bud. Like there were certain times where I'm like, you're out for revenge and you're walking real slow to get your revenge right now. Like,
true.
You just soaking it up or what's going on? But I
he also had his wrist slit sort of and his chest slit.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, fair, yeah. There were injuries, yeah. That's fine. That's fine, bud.
But okay, he's also Nicolas Cage. So yeah.
Wait, what part of this are we going full realism, and what part of this are we just accepting like this crazy LSD drug infused ending?
It's true.
I just accept that Nicolas Cage can just do this in real life. I assumed he actually did do all these things, though.
Yeah.
Well, the third act is a documentary.
Yeah. But I was going to mention, at this point, do you think if you ever talked to Panos Cosmatos, it would just be the worst fucking small talk you've ever heard in your life? Because one thing he is horrible about is like the small talk scenes where they go on for a long time.
But I would say this is his strongest written script because I don't think he co-wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Beyond the Black Rainbow and his short he did, The Cabinet of Curiosities, was weakest scripts. Very, very, you know, indulgent and abstract. Like some of the dialogue's clunky and everything. But this actually felt like a nice through line story, simple story to follow. And then like Nicolas Cage is just channeling this wonderful performance, you know. So.
Yeah, and I wanted to circle back on something that Rolando, you were saying. I think the biggest strength of this film is like the emotion and vibe of it overall, through the visuals and through the music. Because like, I feel like this is a movie you could just talking about the visuals alone, you could just put this movie on silent and like watch it and be like, damn, this thing it's awesome. Like how just all the visuals and like the ghosting and the mashing of faces and stuff like that. Like so sick.
Which is one of my favorite scenes in the movie,
dude. Yeah, when the faces are overlapping.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Jeremiah and Mandy's face.
Yeah,
which again, that was a thing in the theaters where I was like, I'm missing part of the dialogue because I'm like so immersed in like the sound and everything. So I had no idea how funny that whole conversation was. I was like, convinced. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
No, it's a pretty funny conversation actually.
Oh, dude, I love when he puts that record on. He's like, do you like the Carpenters? And you're like, oh, you're just a failed musician. Okay. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Right on. Oh, wow. Let me you're impress in the buff.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. How do we feel about Batman's dad being a cult leader?
That took me a little bit to figure out who it was before I put that together. Yeah.
So that actor played Thomas Wayne in Batman Begins.
Whoa. Okay. Did not catch that.
Yeah.
That and a new podcast favorite, Richard Blake, plays call him the chemist, I guess. The guy that made the bad LSD.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that guy's badass. So if you've seen Barbarian, he was in that.
Ah,
dude, oh man, I recognize him from something completely different. I was like, oh yeah, it's that guy. He works as the guy making LSD, like in like such a great way.
He was also not like anybody would recognize him for this, but he played the fuck was he called the. Oh my god. In Game of Thrones, the zombie ice king guy.
Oh wait, was he the main
He?
For the fourth and fifth season, he was that guy.
Oh really? Didn't know that.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
Huh.
I'm trying to remember what I have seen him in. Yeah. It'll come to me.
Yeah, but fantastic cast. I did recognize the older woman.
Oh, you did?
Who kept getting dismissed. Yeah, she was, I'm saying I recognized her in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the shitty one that we reviewed.
Oh, yeah, she's the mom, week. Huh?
That's
right.
Right away I was like, oh, shit, it's that lady from Mandy.
What'd you think of Mandy herself? Andrea Risenbora Ruff. Nailed it.
I think it's perfect dismount, bud.
Right?
I mean, look, Riseborough? I'm not trying for it. I'll be honest. Like, I'm
pretty sure it's Andrea Risenborough.
There we go. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, from Birdman. And that's why, like, we never did possess her, but that's where I was like, oh, shit, that's her.
That's right.
That's Mandy.
Of course, she has, like, a critical part, right? The whole movie's about her. Everything so much hinges on her. Like, but I think she definitely,
yes,
like she's almost a presence in this movie. She's not really like chatty or like relatable, but she's kind of, I would say used as symbolic, as a symbolism throughout the movie of almost like, that's why I felt like the whole first part was almost like, it was like almost a dream. Like it didn't happen, you know? That's how one way I thought you could interpret it, that it was like otherworldly. This guy was just seemed like lonely, you know, lumberjack. And, you know, who's to say he really has this life, right? Like he only has that one other guy he talks to. He got the weapon from.
Oh, Duke. What's his name from fucking, is it Predator?
Right? Yeah. Bill Duke.
Bill Duke. Yeah.
Bill Duke.
Yeah. So... But it was,
that's interesting because one thing I was looking for something in the very beginning of the movie before coming on the pod, and I forgot that when Mandy is introduced, she's drawing, and it's the same drawings that come up at the end.
Mm.
But like, it's all the like the big fantasy stuff that also happens elsewhere in the movie, and so. Given the copious amount of drugs that happen in this film, part of me was like, huh, is this like maybe like this just was like a thought that they had in the cabin in the woods, like this story that they're dreaming up? Like, did any of it happen, or like did this actually happen? And I was like, oh, that would be an interesting way to look at it, like just through her storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the only reason I think it is all real is because she's the only one that wants to be there. Because Nicolas Cage was very like, oh man, I was thinking, can we just like go somewhere else? Like, I really don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Which also had me thinking, so according to Panos, this is supposed to be about these two rockers that ended up living in the woods. And as the story progresses, it made me think like, you are just supposed to make assumptions about Nicolas Cage's. Sorry, I'm getting a bunch of work texts, and I keep fucking turn off the links to all my fucking devices, so I'm getting dinged all over the place. How he had this like previous life of being somebody that was like a fucking, like he has no qualms about killing people, like he's very good at it too.
Yeah,
there were some things about that that I did want to like explore. Mm-hmm. Like also like when he just like. All of a sudden, he becomes like a expert blacksmith and like forges this sword axe hybrid combo thing. And you're like, I thought this dude was a lumberjack. Where did he get the blacksmithing tools?
And as far as being a lumberjack, I mean, I just don't know. Obviously, I've never done that before in my life. But is it normal for people to get flown out to remote parts of a forest?
I'm going to suspect that's true.
And then
I'm going to say that's true.
But then, then how do you transport all that wood? I mean, I'm assuming via truck, but through pathways that don't exist. Like, so I'm curious as to like what his actual job is. Like, what is it? Is he a lumberjack or is he something else?
I think I kind of felt like my brain immediately went to this other smaller movie, Rolling Thunder. And it's about a like. It's also a revenge movie. That's also about an ex like vet with like PTSD who I believe like, was it his family that died? I forget. His family dies or something. Somebody dies. He's tortured and he has to witness it, which actually kind of cued me into like, this is almost the exact same thing happens like in terms of like tying up and then this gang of people like murder his loved ones in front of him.
You mean Cyborg?
Or Cyborg, yeah. And then, like...
I'm just kidding. There's so many fucking movies that are the same exact thing.
And then he immediately, like, survives, and he turns into, like... He immediately snaps into that military mode, and, like, he takes revenge and stuff. And I kind of felt like maybe this guy had, like, a military background, because he even had a name for the gun crossbow situation, the Reaper, right? So, clearly...
Yeah, the Reaper, yeah.
Clearly, it's almost like...
And he never missed a shot.
Yeah,
the two shots he took.
There's so much mystery. That's true.
Not once. No, that's I remember when like he goes over, he's like, do you have it? He just pulls out the crossbow. He's like, are we about to get some backstory here or what's going on? And then it was just like, no, it's just like he's got a buddy who's like, oh, if you're ready to kill some people, take those too.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, I think that's as much as we're going to get.
Yep.
Oh, it's funny. I mean, I guess he was trying to do like Bill Duke wouldn't be like, if they're old buddies, they're not going to talk about where they come from. They know.
For sure.
But he's like quick to tell them, oh yeah, those like Gwar over there, they're actually like they're a biker gang, right? That wronged this dude. And then that dude made him a bad batch of LSD. And then instead of killing him, they just loved it.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Which also like, when Cage just like takes like the tiniest drop on his tongue of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then like you think like, oh, this dude like in act one or act two was like chugging the entire jar. It's like, whoa, like what, where are these guys supposed to be living on what plane, man? Like,
yep.
Damn.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. I imagine they probably are real stinky people. Just like shitting and pissing and
you mean all those takeout containers don't scream?
That was
smells good.
That was the most disgusting part of this movie. I mean, the takeout containers.
Oh yeah.
The million takeout containers in their trailer or whatever. Ugh, that was I could feel that.
Well, that was also, it seemed like the two dead people didn't look like they were like old decaying dead people. They look freshly dead.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm like, then they made a little cave. I don't know.
Yeah.
They made like a little basement cave and
yeah,
what seemed to be a trailer home.
Yeah. Channeling
ingenuity, man.
Road Warrior or something on those. That's kind of the vibe I got. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You ripped my shirt. That part made me happy. Yeah, I forgot how graphic this movie gets, but it's also like on par with Thanos.
Like, that's true.
Like it's like nothing happens, then it's like insanely graphic.
I thought it was relatively just kind of knowing a little bit of the story, I kind of figured it would be exploitive in like grindhouse B movie style. I still found it relatively restrained for that type of movie. Like, I never really was like, oh my god, it's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in terms of violence.
Yeah.
And or like any of the other things they do, drugs or violence towards other people and stuff like that. I never found it like obscenely like over the top, despite the subject matter. So I actually kind of did appreciate that a little bit. Kind of kept me, it didn't pull me out. Sometimes for me, if something's like too like over the top or graphic, kind of sucks me out of the movie a little bit. So I thought it was relatively restrained considering the plot and everything. So,
but what did you think about the sword penis?
I thought it was freshly used and that was quite disgusting.
Yeah, that was like, wait, what? Huh. All right, well, I guess this is happening.
Yeah, definitely.
And we should also talk about, is there any spoilers in this? It's a revenge movie.
Is there any negatives? Anybody did anything that didn't like?
Because I'm trying to help our cues. Can you just say we're going into spoilers and then?
Oh, you're going to go to spoilers? Okay.
But, well, I mean, what are our spoilers? I feel like there are none. Cue the spoilers. Okay, now that cue is done.
All right, let's. Yeah, I need these edit points. All right, let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers.
I don't know.
Mandy dies. I don't know. Yeah. That happens in like the first act.
But see, I didn't know that. I was actually surprised. Oh, yeah. That was actually like, my impression was that he's like on this revenge trip to get her back. And so when she dies, like the first act or like literally the end of like what, the first or middle act or whatever, like it was like, oh my God, she's dead. She's definitely dead. There's no question about she's dead.
Yeah.
And you know, and I kind of got that, like, so that definitely changed the tone for the second part of this movie, that he's just shelve an individual looking for revenge and stuff. So I honestly thought, you know, that he was gonna, that he saves her, or like she lives, or I just assumed, you know, so that did take me by surprise.
No, but he does save her soul, and she lives on in him, in his permy LSD trip.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. When I'm with Rolando a bit. I didn't think that they were going to kill her. And especially over like just laughing at a guy, which I think is also like really good to show how like fragile this dude's ego is and like how petty and ridiculous he is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when they bring her out, hang her upside down in a sleeping bag and set her on fire in front of Nicolas Cage, you're just like,
yeah,
okay. Yeah. We're definitely going down a big revenge hole here. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's not going to keep, nobody's going to be like, I'm just going to forget about this. I would say like the only, like other than that, like the only big spoiler is like whether Nicolas Cage's character lives or dies.
Mm.
Cause like there was a part of me like going in, I was like, oh, is this going to be one of those things where they just like both like fight to the death and then the idea of like being reunited in an afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And then we was just driving away. I was like, oh, okay. Surprised me. Nice.
Yeah.
Way to go, Cage.
I will say the first time I saw the movie, I was taken back that he went after the super biker gang first. Because they were the real threat. And quite honestly, they didn't do anything. They didn't kill anybody. They just like did what they were told to do. But he was like still like, oh, I'm gonna fuck him up.
Yeah.
And then he does. So the rest of the movie, I'm like, is there gonna be any real conflict after this? And no, there isn't. He's just like massacring.
It's like a video game. He just goes like he just takes his time to each individual until he gets to the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Although I think,
but like there's no real fight except for the one the buff dude where we have like the sword fight with the chainsaws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, like, don't get me wrong, super like cool, right? But the other part of me was like, wait a second, you have the element of surprise. You're gonna put down your silent weapon to pick up the noisy weapon that you didn't even get started and running before you come up to this guy, like, homie.
Yeah,
you've done that, so well like, on so many other people. Like, what like, are you doing?
Bad guy, obviously a very fit dude, but also either insanely strong because that is a lot of chainsaw blade, to hold up, or that thing is super fucking flimsy and should have snapped off right away.
Yeah, no. One thing I think that is interesting, though, about talking about, like, going after the Gore / Slipknot guys first. I think one thing that's interesting with that and, like, kind of the arc of the movie is you have... what's Nicolas Cage? It's not Eric Estrada, but what's Nicolas Cage's name?
Red.
Movie? Red. Literally the color of the movie. So you have Red.
Yeah.
I'm so bad with like character names. I just forget them instantly. So Red loses Mandy. And you start off these two in the woods, nice and pure. Also living in a house literally made of windows. Good and bad ideas there, but like literally a glass house. But like, I think one thing that was interesting is in order for him to go after the religious cult, he had to first utilize evil for his goal to get after him. So like, as like you can see him changing from the bathroom scene. When he goes after the guys, he then like puts on the bulletproof jacket. He gets covered in blood. He physically starts becoming darker. He also like uses some of their coke, tries their LSD, which then sends him to the chemist. And like he's like starting to go down into their path a little bit in order to accomplish his goal and get out, which I thought was like a interesting way of enacting his revenge. It's like you have to become the thing you hate in order to get this revenge for the person you love.
Yep.
I was like, oh, that's a nice.
Yeah, no.
Air quotes, nice way to do it.
Yeah, well said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, rookie mistake, Nicolas Cage for trying to run over that first war Slipknot guy.
Yeah, with that
if
car
you're
going to
run over the if you're going to run over the guy, maybe make sure that you're not running over the motorcycle too, cuz you're probably going to
flip. Well, I just assumed it's all the fucking spikes. eat the spiky guy. He went after the spiky guy first.
Yeah.
I think that's what it seemed like before. That's what I assumed the first time I saw it too. But I was like, oh no, the fucking motorcycle's right.
That's true too. That's true too. Yeah.
That's a good point. I did not catch the motorcycle was right there. Cause I remember watching that and I was like, I mean, we're in this kind of like crazy violent world. Like I get like the big, I get like, it's cool, but like, I'm happy you just said that. Cause like, it made no sense. I was like, in what world would a fleshy body flip a car?
Yeah.
In the world where a motorcycle's in front of it. There you go.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. So how'd you guys feel about the end of him, where you get that, which people call the most iconic part of the film, because people just recognize and associate Mandy with this Nicolas Cage with that fucking weird wide-eyed grin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily happy, but covered in blood.
It definitely, for the moment, I get what the moment's supposed to be. It did seem a little like Nicolas Cage acting in that scene, but I accepted it because I was you know, happy with the what the moment was conveying, right? That he was remembering Mandy after he had finished killing everybody. So, but then, you know, it hits you with the
but it was two different smiles. So when at the beginning of this sequence, he is clean, right? And he's mm-hmm. in the car with Mandy and they're both like alive. And he's like, has like a genuine smile. Like he's actually like very happy to see her. And then when it's her and she's kind of crying and it cuts back to him and it's like him in real time, his smile is not as genuine. It's like psychotic.
Mm-hmm. Cause that's more of where he is now. He's in the psychotic state.
Yeah. He's broken.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like, I think it's their entire relationship and everything that happened in like 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's like happy together, all clean, revenge, and like the psychotic things he had to do to get the revenge to then like sit and like be fine with it. So maybe it was like the closure of like, yeah, I did it for you
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Yeah. I thought that was a nice moment also as he's finished killing everybody, he's reflecting on like their first time they met, you know, that was a nice yeah. moment to kind of conclude everything. Like that's like him saying like, oh, okay. I'm like, goodbye. I did it. I'm done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd you feel about it, bud?
Oh, same. I agree with all that. But it also made me think, I don't know if it would ruin it, but it would be great if Panos did like a prequel movie before he meets Mandy and the person he was before that. And he was actually just a psychotic killer. Like
right.
He calms down because of this person that comes into his life.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. Because like, as we touched on, like this dude never misses.
Mm-hmm.
With a crossbow, yeah. nonetheless, yeah. like
has an absurd tolerance for pain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, yeah. expert blacksmither, despite using the improper angle of an angle grinder to get the blade sharp, but whatever. But like,
I mean, have you ever used that technique though? How do you know for a fact?
I have, and it just makes the blade very dull. not that I've built my own weaponry. Okay, this is going off course. But yeah, it is like clearly homie knows what he's doing with some weaponry. And you're like, oh. But yeah, I think that would be cool to see like Nicolas Cage or Red, as he's known in the movie, like his previous life before Mandy and like what she did to transform him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's also something to be said about Mandy never once, either of them ever really screamed. I mean, he ends up screaming more, but she never screamed. She never really seemed afraid. And then she gets stung by that wasp, and I think that was supposed to like loosen her up. And then basically she's looking at him and laughs on purpose to piss him off.
Yeah.
Jeremiah. So I'm like, who was this person before too? I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because like character wise, Mandy is the most control of their emotions.
Yep.
And like so much of the film is predicated on like these men just like losing it for better or for worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much all of them, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's one dude in the film that like keeps it totally under control other than the chemist and Duke,
I guess.
Bill
yeah.
Duke. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But
I don't know. Yeah. Fucking love this movie.
It's fun, man. What do you guys think of the animations?
They're good.
Yeah, they're fun. They're very like those 70s movies. I can't think of any of them.
Like heavy metal or...
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, heavy metal. But there's also the one about very heavy metal style. I think the same animators.
The Hobbit. The Lord of the Rings.
Ralph Baskin. That's true.
No,
the one that was kind of like a... The dude that's kind of like Conan the Barbarian. I don't know if you remember this movie, and it's very exploitive too, but it's like prehistoric, but very science fiction-y. I forgot. But yeah, stuff like that.
Hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. It's cool.
Yeah. I liked him stylistically. I'll be honest. And this goes back to like that, what I was saying earlier of like, I feel like there were things I just don't understand. Like, especially the last one where Mandy... like reaches into this tiger humanoid mega muscle beast and like pulls out the green gemstone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like,
yeah,
how does this green gemstone fit? I don't like it's cool, but I don't understand what's happening or like how this ties into anything.
I would,
the heart of the,
beast. I would say maybe it's, maybe he's the beast and cause he, it's a similar stab wounds, right? Could be she's taking something out of him symbolically.
So Red's heart is green?
Yeah.
Like
1,000,000%.
Yeah. And that's maybe where I just need to like, I don't know, use the internet to my advantage.
Yeah.
Do a little research. But yeah, that was like one thing where I was like, I feel like I'm really missing something at the moment.
There's also, I don't know, I would have to research this too, to be quite honest, but I did notice the first time he has the fever dreams about her in animated style, she is dead and more of a zombie, and is every time he has another one of the dreams, she's more alive. Then at the end, she's like fully fleshed out.
Mm-hmm. That's good reading on it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
So there you go.
And that's,
we figured it out.
Figured it out. Who needs the internet?
We have finally figured out the meaning behind Barry Manilow's Mandy song.
That's right.
And it took Panos Cosmatos to help us in this journey.
I'll ask, is there anything you guys didn't like? Anything? Because, I mean, it's a very likable movie, but...
I'm curious... to have to experience it in the theaters, because in my opinion, I feel like the last act is a little slow. Like, I mean, it plays well with the like sludge doom like score that's going on, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
But there, like, as I kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, there were certain times where it was like, oh, you're gonna take that long to get over to that guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, oh, come on, bud. I thought you were trying to get these guys.
I agree with that. Like, the story was too matter of fact, you know? Like, the story is, like, too obvious. There's no, like, the dramatic tension's kind of sucked out because we already kind of know what we're witnessing, and the stakes aren't really... Aside from his revenge, the stakes are not as high anymore because it's kind of like he's just going, he's winning. We just know he's going to win every fight. I don't think I ever doubted he was in any kind of like jeopardy of not winning, you know?
That's what I meant earlier. Like, especially after he kills Gore, it's like, oh, these other guys aren't going to be a fucking threat at all.
Yeah.
And they weren't at all, except for like the one dude with the chainsaw. But like, mm-hmm. like none of them. like obviously he's going to fucking massacre him now.
Mm-hmm.
On that chainsaw fight too, the thing that is kind of funny, and like maybe this is just like ties into like, oh, he just wants to like get closer to death or something, I don't know, but like The dude snipes, like, Red snipes that guy at the station wagon with his axe. Like, no fight whatsoever. Oh, yeah, just like, conk, right?
Yeah.
And then he has the axe again, and he's walking up to the guy who, granted, doesn't know he has a chainsaw, but it's like, Holmes, you could snipe that guy too. Like, you just very clearly did it super easy.
Sure.
But,
it was also high.
That's fair. Hey, man, you only get lucky so many times, right? But, like, I think maybe part of the, like, pacing at the end for me might have come from, I feel like, like I said before, the beginning has this, like, what feels like a critique on cults and extremism and, like, extremism religion and, like, what some people are willing to do and, like, the deals they're willing to make with people that you would assume are their opposites. And I felt like that was, like, pretty heavy front-loaded. And then the last half just goes straight revenge. And I think especially with things like the chemist and the tiger and then the tiger growling against the moon, I was like, okay, like, really focus on the meanings of these things. And I think if I had just been like, oh, it's just going to be revenge, just been like, okay, I'm just going to sit back, I'm going to let it play out, and I'm just going to, like, let it wash over me rather than be, like, so actively, like, okay, I got to critique this and try to figure out what this frame means and, like, this pulls into here. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
No, for sure.
I don't think we actually saw him kill him, that chemist guy, right? It's more alluded to.
I don't think he killed him. I think he just went over there to go figure out where the
other guys were. Yeah.
Yeah. Because would know because he provided the LSD shit so they could, ask the war gang to help him.
That's right. Yeah.
And that stuff was strong. I mean, like, getting shot through the neck and then pulling an arrow through your neck. Yeah. I was like, what PCP kind of crazy ass shit is this?
I was going to say when he finally dispatches Jeremiah, there was like a long conversation where Jeremiah's like, no, like, you can't hurt me, dude. Like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like God's chosen one. And then how he, like, completely breaks down. He's like, I'll suck your dick. Like, I'll suck it. Is that what you want? And then he snaps back into, like, no, you're fucking nothing. Blah, 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 blah. Like, God, this and that. And then Nicolas Cage is like, I'm your God now. And now he has, like, the growly voice because he's all.
What did you think that meant? Intense. That was a kind of a wild thing to say, right? Or anything can maybe pull from that? Because I thought that was kind of a crazy way to.
I'm the person that's gets to choose. You live or die. You get to live or die.
Yeah, that tracks. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I thought that, especially the way it was done, it was like he says it in a very kind of crazy voice or whatever, right? Like it's purposely heightened. So.
And I think it's also like with that too. It's pretty clear that Jeremiah is like is willing to abandon everything in an effort to like. Save his own skin, like comes off as this like, you know, mouthpiece of God, and then it's just like, no, I'll suck your dick, I'll do whatever they say, like forget all that, like you know, if somebody was like truly believing that like they were endowed with these powers and whatnot, it's like no, you would expect them to like till the very end, like be like, you can't hurt me, I'm protected, and so like. When he finally like goes back and forth, flip flops, and then Red, I'm so bad with names. And then when Red is just like, "I'm your God now," it's just like, "Yeah, dude, like you didn't have any basis to stand on, like the entire time you're just like a tiny little piece of shit."
Yep.
Yeah.
You're nothing. Yeah. I wonder if that's like Panos, like all of his favorite movies, because I would like mention again, like. Mad Max and I was going to say Days of Thunder. What was the other one?
What?
Not Days of Thunder. The movie you were talking about.
Oh, Rolling Thunder. Rolling Thunder, yeah.
Rolling Thunder and Cyborg.
Last House on the Left. Like a lot of different revenge. Yeah, a lot of revenge movies.
You know, we can also do like I Saw the Devil, which is a fairly recent one, Korean revenge film. I wonder if that's like Panos doing his he really wishes that at the end, the good guy would just like completely fucking obliterate the bad guy, because the bad guy's nothing, as opposed to there being a, like a real fight.
Hmm.
Like just like thoughts you have as a kid, like I'm super powerful. Too bad. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. That's. I mean, there is something then to be said about just like how strong your hero is, or it's like, oh, one, two, done. All right. Well, that wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about it, Rolando? How'd you feel about the end and like that whole sequence?
Yeah. Similarly. Yeah. I think that, I was taken aback at first by what Nicolas Cage said, but, I did have to think about it, which is one of the things I wanted to ask. And I think John kind of spells it out pretty correctly that like, he's basically saying like, I'm in control of your fate now, like screw your God and stuff like that. No, I thought that was a wonderful way to end. And even the last shot when he's driving away and there's like a mix of, the story that's been kind of been being told through animations and sci-fi elements and stuff. Kind of it's like mixing with each other. I thought that was a fun way to end. I was pretty satisfied with the ending overall.
Now, speaking of the end, what do you think, or do you think that there is an important significance to the last piece of art that's shown with Red standing in front of the tiger howling at the moon?
Hmm.
Because, like, I agree with you guys. I think in the world of this movie, everything happens. But that means that Mandy drew this or saw something in Red to make her want to create this picture. Because, like, as we all know, making movies is really expensive, so every frame costs a lot of money. And, like, if you want to set that up, that's going to take time, and it's important for some reason. Do you think that that last shot has a larger significance other than just, like, a tidy artistic way to wrap up the end of the film?
He's the, it could be symbolic. It could be he's the uncaged tiger himself. Like he himself emotionally was uncaged, right? Like just side of him.
He also rocked a baseball jersey with Mandy for the first half of the movie that had that same tiger as like a baseball logo. And he had a 44 on the back of his
That's
shirt.
Also true. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's like something they had together. Or
could
something.
Also be something.
Well, I thought the 44 was on the front. I thought those are two different shirts.
Oh, they might be. I don't know why I remember, like, he had like, what, two different shirts throughout the movie. But,
yeah, it's true. He did. Yeah. Yeah.
But then, to John, your point and the tiger on his shirt. So, like, there's some symbolism of, like, tigers and the character of Red in the film.
Yeah.
Which, they're orange. yeah. So dumb. But yeah, no, I'm just curious. Did you guys have any thoughts on what that might be?
Oh, maybe Mandy was kind of like same thing like the chemist was to Lizzie the tiger. Like Mandy was Red's like handler. Mandy was what kept Red tame you know, and then now that Mandy's gone, he's unleashed.
Yeah, because of how she died too. I mean, I think she probably did like.
Which the way she fucking died, that was lit. So
straight lit fire, as they say these days.
So you want to hear a fun bit of trivia? Richard Brake? No, his name is Blake, right?
Huh?
Anyway, when he read the script and he got cast as a chemist. He said that in an early draft that Lizzie was supposed to be a lizard. And when he showed up on set, Panos was like, oh, by the way, Lizzie's a tiger now.
Oh. So he's just maybe something a thought he had in while shooting to change it. And then just sort of hit that same note again and again in the movie. Possibly that symbolism.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, like you can't just change that shirt too, right? Post, it's true. So I'm not,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if he's just like, doesn't tell people stuff. Or
he could have been on the fly making stuff up. I believe that too. It's kind of.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't. So, I was going to say on the fly making stuff up kind of idea. Not horror films, but the director Wong Kar-wai, like famous for Chungking Express.
That's right. Yeah.
Ashes of Time Redux and stuff. Like, he very famously like shoots without like completed scripts and just kind of like makes things up on the day and then puts them together and can make some really good stuff. So I don't know, maybe.
Sure.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe there's something there. Also, we can just cut that and make me not sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. Also,
I was going to say, we've also worked with plenty of directors that try to do the same thing, and it
turns out perfectly. So,
well, I was trying to bring that up as a praise, but
so some other, do you guys want to hear some more fun trivia that might help flesh out what we're trying to talk about?
Sure.
Oh, dude, hit me.
So, Nicolas Cage's whole persona was inspired by the fact that when days before he was about to start shooting this film, his wife left him.
Oh.
His wife that he was with for like 14 years.
That tracks. That tracks.
Yeah. So that's him grieving.
He's incredibly emotionally vulnerable in this movie. You know,
one of the more honest portrayal, or like honest acting roles I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. True.
The co-writer Aaron Stewart on says that this was kind of written about his parents' death.
Hmm.
Which I'm
curious about that.
have a hard time with that one.
I mean, there's one aspect about that that I'd be like, yeah, that's something I can see the ties together. But God, I hope that there's not more than the fact that unfortunately his parents passed. Like, if there's more similarities between this movie and that happening, I would like to say I am very sorry for your loss.
The theme.
He said specifically the scene where Jeremiah and Mandy are refusing.
Yeah.
And the weapon forged was supposed to be an homage to the metal band Celtic Frost.
I saw something about that where the axe looks like the, well, some people call it a sword, looks like the F from the band. And that's where the design comes from.
Yeah. Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Let's see if you caught this one, Justin, because I sure as hell wouldn't.
I don't know.
The Ooh. Book that Mandy is reading, Seeker of the Serpent's Kiss, is a prop, a fake book, obviously, right? It is actually the name of the musical composition playing during that scene, and it is by the film's composer.
That is true. That is some, because, not going to lie, I wanted to seem smarter than I am, so I tried to, I watched this and then, like, looked up some stuff that, like, other smarter people than I, like, caught, and that was one thing that got mentioned, and I was like, that's really cool. That being said, I also wonder if Johan Johansson, because on a, like, the projects that I work on, it's good to have a name for the cues that you're writing, to not only help you remember, but then it helps you remember where they are in the project. And, you know, so rather than having something that's like 101 M06 V1, you know, 0.3 or whatever, I'll just take like a line that says, exactly. But I'll just take like a line from a scene and like make that the title of the cue.
Yeah.
And to like bring it in. So I'm curious how they went about naming that, because if that were me doing that, I would be like, wait, what's the name of that book? That's gonna become the title of this cue. 100%.
Yeah. And something Justin and I have discussed is we're not sure if you're aware of this, Rolando. At the beginning, when they were presenting the film minutes or like what, an hour before they were gonna basically press play, they had queued up the opening song Starless by King Crimson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they had not yet gotten the rights for it. They had not yet gotten the permission, but they still put the credit in just in case. And they also had it like, well, we're going to present the film without the song if you don't get the permission. But like an hour before, King Crimson was like, no, it's cool.
Yeah, they got super close to like.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
We might just have to pull this really fast.
I thought that movie. I'm sorry. Sorry. That song was like perfectly sets up a tone of the beginning of the movie. It was really nice. I couldn't imagine it without it.
Yeah.
You know what he maybe had is, you know, God knows, maybe had like a placeholder, just some score or something. If something didn't go through.
Yeah, they had a. Johan had written an alt intro just in case they like King Crimson was like, yeah, no, can't do it. And to that story, I know that they like apparently they were negotiating with them for months trying to get them to say like, yeah, we're going to do it. And I think part of the reason that there's also that title card that says like, intro theme song by King Crimson is like a way of being like, come on guys, like yeah. let us yeah. use it, look what we're doing, we're really promoting you. Because I know like some of the more like legendary like older bands from that time, a little bit trickier to get their permission to use songs. It's not as easy as like bands nowadays are like, well, we've lost a lot of revenue streams, so you want to use my music in your movie? Yes, please do. I would like that money.
Or they
now.
Could just ask for like an absorbent amount of money too. Like an insane.
Yeah.
You know, some of those older bands.
Yeah.
So
like, because I know like Zeppelin is like notoriously difficult to get rights for Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm.
And not that these are the same movies at all, but.
Unless you're Sean P. Diddy Combs and you do Godzilla.
Yeah.
God, yeah. Or Jack Black, right?
I was just going to say, yeah, man. John Iris, same way. I like how you, Rolando's yeah. like, yeah, like Godzilla. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, like School of Rock.
Yeah. Yeah. We are big Linklater stands.
Yeah. Tomato, tomato. Yeah. Godzilla, School of Rock. Same.
I mean, metaphorically, it's the same story, right? Just trying to conquer a monster.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, Rolando, what do you think about, is there anything that you would change?
Change? I think that the thing that I get so like interested that I get a little frustrated with Panos is sometimes his stories lack, right? Like, I understand that this is purposely done ambiguously and there's a very easy through line. Some of his other stuff, like Beyond the Black Rainbow, or like I said, Cabinet of Curiosities, like his dialogue and stories just meander and they're slow paced and they feel slow. But when he's very, very capable director to just when he's shooting action or anything, and you just feel that, like, it's just what he's so inept with. I almost want him to work with a writer who's able to work with a writer that is able to kind of like connect with, and they can kind of balance each other out, similar to like Spike Jonze and like was it Charlie Kaufman, or like that early relationship where like the material and the direction are like perfectly kind of matched. Like, I feel like he needs that to kind of, in my opinion, reach another height for him, because I feel like he has definitely one side of his directing and cinematography and all that other stuff down pat. It's storytelling is a little is weak.
Uh-huh.
Which I agree, but do you think that would make him dangerously close to just being too commercial?
Well, I mean, in this sense, yeah, commercial
right
could
now,
be.
It seems like he's catering to like people that love, I mean, it's going to sound like a joke, but like people that love to do acid or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these movies really track in that sense.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I've known people that talk about like, oh man, I fucking watched Beyond the Black Rainbow, and when I saw it on acid, it was like the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen in my life. And I don't love that movie.
I don't feel like Charlie Kaufman had to like with the stuff he's written had to like sacrifice anything for Spike Jonze to direct it. Mm-hmm. It's like they had like a great marriage together. Like, he almost needs that like partner to, in my opinion, to collaborate with to kind of get more out of him or accentuate more of his ideas in a more structured like story way.
All right. So I got a question for both of you then. And on this line, so if you're a producer and you can choose whatever script you want Panos to direct, what are you going to give Panos to direct to be like, this is what I want you to do because I think that you're going to handle this in a way that I would be really pleased with.
If I'm a producer, whichever one is like the cheapest to make, I can undercut and hire just a shit ton of PAs to be in every department.
Yeah, you did it, bud. Congratulations.
If I'm a producer.
And that's how movies are made, everybody.
Well, I mean, the way I kind of take that one, what genre would I like to see him tackle? Maybe something. He's such an auteur.
Or like a franchise. Sure. Yeah.
That's an interesting question.
I'd like to see him work with Michelle Gondry, though. That'd be fun.
The practical stuff that they do on those sets mixed with like the aesthetic of Mandy, that would be awesome.
Give him Mission Impossible. Why not? What would that be? The next Mission Impossible movie. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like we'd be doing a disservice to this podcast if I didn't say, give Panos and Michelle Gondry a jump scare movie.
Right.
And see what they do.
Or give him...
just like the most basic script and be like, you can't change anything about it.
You know, freaking...
You can add stuff.
James Bond is basically like done, right? Give him James Bond. What the like, he can start over. He can do whatever he wants, right? You know? That would be fun. Because he definitely has that aesthetic.
I was really hoping one of you was going to say Fast and the Furious. No. I'm not going to lie. I was pulling for it so hard. Like Fast and the Furious, but in the style of Mandy. I'd watch
maybe
it.
A Western, too, because I know his dad shot Tombstone.
Western would be fucking
Tombstone. Cool. Yeah, maybe a Western.
The greatest mustache movie of all time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Actually, Panos was one of the cam ops on Tombstone.
Yep. So
that's really
I could
cool.
see him eventually doing a Western. Obviously, I think he would be... I could see him doing one eventually. That'd be crazy. Kind of fits in his wheelhouse of stuff he's interested in.
Well, and on that idea, what would you, like we were talking about earlier, if nobody said this was a horror movie, what would you classify this movie as?
I'd probably still say horror.
Yeah?
There's too much gore in it for it to be anything else in my head. Like, you don't really get a slasher movie where somebody's, like, head is being crushed with his eyeballs popping out.
That's fair.
Like, or an axe in the head or...
Yeah, and the thing...
Or ghouly biker guys.
One of the things that I've noticed as we've done this show is that horror is, like, not easily defined, right? Like, very, very broad. Like, it's not one thing, you know? It's kind of like a lot of different things could be horror, which is kind of like what I've discovered, right, as doing this show. Because one of the fears... Early fears first before doing the show was like, are we really just going to be doing like Wishmaster 5? Like, what are we going to be reviewing? Mm-hmm. Or I don't know if I have anything like interesting to say about it, but there's like a whole wonderful world of like indies movies that are horror movies that are like, they're doing wild stuff. Like they're doing stuff that's like in reinventing horror. Mainstream horror is a little like, you know, cookie cutter, you know, they got to sell it to a bigger audience. Right. Yeah. So that's kind of expected.
Like, you know, people are going to die. There's probably going to be sex in it, right? But some of like the better horror movies we've seen, none of that's in there. Like,
right?
What?
Come True.
No sex and nobody dies. And Come True. There you go. No, somebody does die. Yeah. Technically, actually they don't. But technically, The Babadook. Nobody dies. It's just about grief.
Yep.
You know, and relationships between a mother and a son.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I want to add a bit of fun trivia. One more, last bit of fun trivia.
Ooh,
do you guys remember the short Too Many Cooks?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that weird Adult Swim?
Oh! Dude, I'm so happy you brought this up because that was one thing I wanted to talk about. I completely forgot, but yeah, take it away.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, the mac and cheese gremlin.
Mm-hmm.
The commercial was directed by the guy that did the short for Too Many Cooks.
Yeah.
The Adult Swim Too Many Cooks.
Yeah. Oh, dude. I remember watching the movie and that commercial comes on. I'm like, I truly don't know if this is like a lost 80s mac and cheese commercial or if they made this for the movie. And then like, yeah, in the little bit of research I was doing, like somebody brought up that the guy from Too Many Cooks, I was like, makes 100% sense.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You ready for this, Reach? Is the green mac and cheese goblin the green stone that Mandy pulls out of the animated beast? Is the entire movie just a quest
commercial for mac and cheese? Yeah,
right. Because tigers are also orange, which is also on Red's shirt, and all he wants is a good bowl of mac and cheese.
And
I think we figured
basically, essentially, you could. There might have been like an alt script at the end where Jeremiah at the end is like, "You can't fuck with me. I'm cheese," and Nicolas Cage is like, "Well, I'm Mac."
Exactly.
Or Mac and Beef, which is a fun little bit of trivia. Justin and I met, right? Was it that? Yeah, it was that one, I think.
Was that one or was it one before? Yeah.
I think it was that one. Downtown. We worked with that kid who was like blowing up for a little while. I haven't seen him in a minute, but.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking. Yeah, he's a we're doing a great job describing this.
Yeah,
John and I worked on this show for Nickelodeon.
Oh, Mac and Beef. That's what
was called Mac and Beef, but it was like they were doing this weird app kind of service thing like way, way early on that clearly has succeeded. But yeah, in that same vein, because I think it was another Nickelodeon thing that you're talking about, that redhead kid who he was in one of those offshoot Always Sunny projects. I'm trying to where Dee plays this like aunt who comes back to her. She's like kind of a screw up, comes back to like watch over her niece and nephew whose parents like went to jail for tax fraud or something like this. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
The Mick.
Yeah.
Yeah. He played the son. I also remember him from one of the Wet Hot American Summer, the one where it's like 20 or 10 years later. Or
yeah,
whatever.
That's right.
He's the bully kid. He's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Thomas Barbusca. That sound? Is that right?
Yeah, nailed it.
You know, I mean, dude, I'm not going to fact check you, so you can say whatever you want. I'm just going to go, yep, that's it.
Okay.
That kid is fucking funny.
Yeah, that scream he has is one of the funniest. Yeah, so good.
He's also got in that same... the Wet Hot American Summer thing, he's like bullying one of the other kids, like the main kid. And Michael Showalter comes in, I think, and he's like, "Hey, come on, did you have to do that?" And he's like, "Yeah, I did. Because I like to do that. I like to do stuff like this." It's like really fucking funny.
Yeah.
And that's our review of Mandy.
That's right.
Some redheaded kid.
Ends with Wet Hot American Summer.
Very, very cool.
That's what you get.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Do you guys have any last thoughts before we rate it?
Watch it and turn it up real loud.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Watch it and turn up real loud.
Okay. You're with that too. Alrighty. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give?
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give Panos Cosmopolis is Mandy 8.9 sexy spooky bones.
Very, very nice.
Ooh,
Justin?
Up there. I'm going to give Mandy 7.9 6.5 sexy spooky bones.
Yeah, I'm similar. I'm going to do 7. I think I liked it the least. Because it's... somehow it worked out that way.
I'm not going to lie. I was waiting for Rolando to go even higher. But I was like...
No, no. Oh. This totally tracks because I feel like Beyond the Black Rainbow, you liked way more than I did. So I was like, I feel like he's just not going to like nothing as much as I did. Because I didn't love Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Yeah, just like I said, I think it's just like, I love this director. I think he's very interesting. They're just like, he kind of has the same problems, I think, with his movies. And it's just, the story element is always lacking a little bit. Everything else is just pretty much on point as a director, as an auteur type of director. So, very nice. Cool. Justin, thank you for being on this episode. Really appreciate you. Want to also say that you also supported us. You still get to support us, too. So I appreciate this, that.
Yeah. Laptop close. It's over, boys. Lose my number. Yeah. So. The skeleton.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
No, but thank you guys very much for having me on. This was super fun. And I'm not gonna lie, there like as we're doing this, everyone was like, all right, we're gonna go into ratings, and all of a sudden I hear the song playing. I'm like, wait, no, John, you can't start talking yet. The song has to end. Oh no. It's on post-production. Like, I know it's post-production. I'm very aware, but there were definitely times where it's like, oh no, we're just moving real quick, aren't we? Nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
Anything to promote though?
Yes. Socials, handle, anything.
A website.
Oh, yeah, you can find me, what are my socials? For a long time, my social was on IG, Justin Rarely Posts, but I changed that to make it easier for the things that I do, so you can find me at Justin Wilmot Music.
Justin Now Posts.
Yeah, Justin Now Posts Music. I have a website called the Memento Mori Collective, and the idea behind it is getting a group of people together to find a way to continue to make music and find a more equitable way for musicians to collaborate together. Because like one of the very difficult things about any art is it's becoming harder and harder to like make a living from it. So trying to find a way to bring people together to be able to do the things that they want to do. And yeah, as far as like other stuff, I've had a bunch of fun just like working on little things behind the scenes on this. And yeah, the new intro for this episode.
Yeah.
John and I just like cranking it out and having a great time. So, yeah. Which is what it's about. Keep having fun.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I think I vaguely described something to you and I played something for you, John. Like, I think this is what it should be. And then you like, perfect. You nailed it. Loved it. So.
Bangarang, yeah, baby.
Definitely. Okay, cool. We'll link all of this like in the show notes and we'll promote it, Justin. So.
Beauty.
Cool. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals. Thank you for listening. And as always.
Stay spooky.
Spooky, spooky, spooky.
Nice.
That's audio tricks, baby.